Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 6, 2017. The house of South Sudan's former army chief remains under siege in Juba.
Anything can happen to my husband, we will hold the president accountable. He doesn't want to release him to go for medical checkup. When we lost our daughter, he refused not to allow him to mourn with the family there in Barry Hamilton.
And South Sudanese youth say tribalism is to blame for the conflict in the country.
Nationalism, usually the citizens pick it from their leaders. How practical is it in this country? What rhetorics do our leaders have that people will rally and support and then say, yeah, I will die for South Sudan?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. It's been 3 days since the South Sudan military deployed forces around the house of the former army chief, General Paul Malong, in Juba. A military spokesman says the troops were deployed after General Malong resisted a government order to release his bodyguards. Some residents in Juba worry about what will happen next. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Juba residents woke up Saturday morning to see heavily armed soldiers deployed along Airport Road and around General Malong's residence. The United Nations upgraded its security alert status for Juba to white, which meant UN staff would work from their residential areas on Saturday. They are working from their offices today. Military spokesman Brigadier General Lulu Roy Kwong says the deployment of tanks and troops was meant to prevent unscrupulous elements from taking the law into their own hands as a result of what he terms a misunderstanding between General Malong and the government. General Kwong says on Friday, government officials ordered Malong to release a platoon of 30 soldiers who were guarding him, but Malong refused to obey the order.
We have had a small misunderstanding with the former chief of General Staff, General Paul Malong Awan. And that is more or less a misunderstanding has resulted into limited deployment of security personnel around his official residence, which is not very far from J1.
President Salva Kiir appointed General Malong SPLA Chief of Staff in early 2014, shortly after fighting broke out between forces loyal to the president and those loyal to his former deputy Riek Machar. After President Kiir sacked Malong in May, Malong left the capital Juba but returned a few days later under President Kiir's directive. Kwong says since Malong is no longer Army Chief of General Staff, there is no need for him to keep the platoon of the soldiers.
The day before yesterday, the former Chief of General Staff was notified about the need for him to allow some of his bodyguards to report back to their previous unit, and that he was allowed to retain only three. That notification did not go down well with him. He did not comply with the order.
Talks continue between government officials and General Malong to resolve the standoff. General Kwong says government forces will continue to be deployed near Malong's residence until the former army chief complies with the government order to release his bodyguards. Abram Awalich, a policy analyst at the Juba-based Suit Institute, describes what led up to the continuous standoff.
Let us go back to what happened in May when Paul Malong was removed. He took off with his soldiers from here in a military convoy heading toward Awil under the guise of darkness on the day he was removed. That was not a good idea. He could be charged for a lot of charges could be raised against him. Because he should have waited, given over his office and congratulate the new chief of staff and then evacuate his home, the government home, and allow the new chief of staff to move in. But that didn't happen. So this explained the reason why I think he's under house arrest. There is no question about it.
Awalich says the government's move to strip Malong of 30 soldiers is justified.
I think having a large number of bodyguards is something that is unwelcome, obviously, because there has to be one chief of staff in town. And so it is like having a president and a former president, and they all run in a motorcade.
A Juba resident who prefers to be identified only as a born for security reasons says seeing tanks and troops frightens her.
We don't want fighting again. We need peace, and in every December, that's the normal day and the normal month that they normally start fighting. So to avoid all these things, we need government to establish all the situation going on, and we are tired of running. So we should maintain peace.
Another Juba resident who prefers to be called the only Malis for safety reasons agrees.
Due to that incident, really I'm scared like nothing. Because here in South Sudan, people are not stable. In case of anything that maybe happens like this, we are not feeling well. All of us, we are scared totally. So I was scared totally. I'm not feeling well as a citizen of South Sudan.
Awolich says the government should explain what is happening, because all the tanks and troops on the streets of Juba has caused fear and anxiety among the public.
If General Malong has breached any law, he should be charged. And then he should be arrested formally and taken to court if there is a problem, if there is an issue that the state needs to bring against him. Otherwise, if there is no such thing as a crime that he has committed, then he should be relieved and let him live like a regular citizen.
The U.S. government recently slapped sanctions on Malong and two South Sudanese officials, saying the three helped orchestrate the ongoing conflict. The Canadian government also sanctioned SPLA Deputy Chief of Defense Forces, General Malek Robin, Information Minister Michael Makwe, and Malong for allegedly profiting from what it calls acts of corruption. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The wife of South Sudan's former Army Chief says the house of her husband has been surrounded by soldiers in Juba who are ordered to disarm General Malong. Lucy Ayak says the soldiers are acting on direct orders from President Salva Kiir. South Sudan in Focus obtained a copy of a letter which stated that, quote, all reasonable force should be used to disarm Malong and his bodyguards. Ayak says President Kiir will be held responsible if anything happens to her husband.
Major General Mangar Buang, Chief of Operation, came with two other officers. Like one person is from military intelligence and the other guy is from police. They came to my husband's house, which is in Juba, and they delivered for him that message, that written document he has seen, the one which has been written on the 30th of October. It's a presidential decree. We told him that he has been told to come and disarm his bodyguard and surrender and go and arrest them. The house now has been all the military, they brought all the arms there to surrender the house. All the army now, the house is under surrender. They surrender all the house.
Have you been able to speak to your husband?
I cannot be able to speak to him because we are in a meeting. Soon they came. They are discussing about going all this in this document. Because the document now is clear, they say that no visiting. Even all his wife are not allowed to visit him unless they take a permission from Chief of General Defense to come and visit him. Number two, all his bodyguards are to be taken and arrested, and he has to remain there inside, no moving outside.
Have you made any attempts to speak to President Kiir, who has signed this letter?
I think nobody has confirmed the letter. Because now they came as an official. They came during working hours. They are in uniform. They came with all their bodyguards to implement this letter.
I know that there have been efforts to talk to the president to allow your husband to go home. Is there any response, any official response from the president? When people meet him, what does he tell them?
No official response. I think you have been seeing my letter. All those letters I've been writing to him, no response. The only response is just to ask last time when I lost my daughter. Is the response he came and told my husband that you are not allowed to go to bury your daughter and you are not allowed to fly to Kenya to go for DNA test. That is the only response he did. But all this attempt which has been done to let him release my husband, he did not want. I don't know what is happening to him.
What are you doing as family members? I've also seen another posting by a name along talking about the same problem. So what are you doing as family members?
We are not doing anything. We are just letting the public know what is going around in Juba. I'm aware of the letter of my son, and the one he has just posted when this exercise is taking place at home in my husband's house. We are just worried. We are worried. Because this, the way I'm seeing it, it can escalate into another war. And President doesn't want to solve it. Anything can happen to my husband. We will hold President accountable. He doesn't want to release him to go for medical checkup. When we lost our daughter, he refused not to allow him to mourn with the family, go and bury her daughter. And now they came to him, they want to arrest his bodyguards. I think even they want to arrest him. What exactly did he done? What has he done to the government? And President doesn't want to come out clearly and charge him in the court of law so that he can defend himself. This is another way of assassinating someone. My husband has been loyal to the government. He never did ill intention about the government. But now look at what the government is paying him back.
You have been speaking about this issue several times. And what are people in Awil saying, people in your hometown of Awil? What are they saying? What are community leaders saying?
They went to President, they even have a meeting with him. They discuss about it. He just promised them that I'm going to release him. He doesn't say anything. One thing he said is he told the community leaders that I'm not happy the way I've released him and he left Juba without handing over the office. That is only what he told those elders. Community elders met him recently, and he promised them that when he come back from Khartoum, he's going to meet him and he's going to release him. Now he came back from Khartoum, and now have you seen what he has done? I think our president doesn't keep his promise. I'm totally confused.
That's Lucy Ayak, wife of South Sudan's former army chief. She was speaking to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, on Friday. The leader of the Federal Democratic Party, who is also South Sudan's former Minister of Wildlife Conservation and Tourism, says the high-level revitalization forum scheduled for December is an important step toward getting South Sudan back to normalcy. Gabriel Changson tells Ayen Bior that the success of the forum relies heavily on its inclusivity.
If we don't take this opportunity and revitalize the failed agreement, then we will be looking for other alternatives which are not in favor of the country or its people. We are for it, but if we don't put our hearts to it as South Sudanese, then it will also be a missed opportunity again.
Could you give us a glimpse of the meetings that were held in Ethiopia? From your view, you say that they were fruitful. But could you give us just a little bit more understanding of what went on behind closed doors during those meetings and what was said?
Well, actually, they were not. I think the process that has been going on since September up to now has been to collect information from various groups in government and in opposition on how the agreement can be revitalized and peace can be restored. So it was those discussions were not about to find a solution immediately, but to solicit the views of various groups. And we, I think it is just like what you are doing now, questioning me. They were also questioning us in different ways. I think it was a bunch of questions set for everybody, for every group, to know what are their thinking on how peace can really be restored. So that was, to us, it was a good one. We believe that the special envoy and his team are busy analyzing and processing all that material they have collected so that they come up with what may be the common positions.
Inclusivity is a word that is thrown around a lot. The international community likes saying it needs to be inclusive. The political parties like saying that. But if you really look at the word, we don't agree on what it means. Because some people will say Machar should be included. Other people will say, well, Taban Dengai is already included, so we don't need Machar. And that seems to be the issue right now. So when you say inclusive, who should be included in your view?
You see, that is how we went wrong in 2015, because we were concentrating on personalities. The president and his former vice president. Did it help us? Did it help the country? No. We should address the root causes of the current crisis. It is not about the personalities. The personalities will come later on. And even so, because of that, when you talk of so-and-so is represented and that is all, then you are missing the point. South Sudan is not about me. It's not about you. It's more than the personalities you are talking about. So the inclusivity we are talking about is the inclusivity of stakeholders. Who are the stakeholders in South Sudan? All the political actors, including both in opposition and in government. They must be there. The civil society organizations must be there. Church-based organizations must be there. Youth, women, even traditional leaders. We want an agreement that brings together South Sudanese, various groups, so that they find a solution for this a difficult situation in which the country found itself in.
That's Gabriel Changson, South Sudan's former Minister of Wildlife, Conservation and Tourism, speaking to Ian Beer from Nairobi. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new report says South Sudan still faces food insecurity. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there a system for naming the children in your community? Tell us about it.
Here in Uganda, when they are giving you a name, there is what we call a clan name, and each and every clan has its own names. Though some may look to be similar, but they differ in different ways.
In my community, children are named after their grandfathers, normally. But with the upsurge of Christianity now, you can give Christian names, even in the dialect.
Children are named according to where they come from or who has given birth to them. Those from the palace who are princes and princesses have the way they name them. Twins also have a way they name them. Children who are born out of wedlock are different from naming compared to those who are born in marriage.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Police on the Uganda-South Sudan border say unknown people kidnapped three women in the border town of Nimule over the weekend and killed two of the women after their relatives failed to pay a ransom. South Sudan police spokesman says the third woman was released after her husband paid a ransom. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayer reports from Juba.
National Police spokesperson Brigadier Daniel Justice Ashore says the husband of the surviving woman paid a ransom of 2.5 million Ugandan shillings, the equivalent of about $700. Achor says Apiok Char was kidnapped Saturday evening when she went to buy diapers from a shop for her four-month-old baby.
He got kidnapped by taken with a car, forced into a car, and then the car drove away. After some time, the lady was forced to give the number, contact of his husband. Then unknown people, they called the husband, asked him for $1,000, otherwise they will kill the lady.
No one paid the ransom for the other two kidnapped women. and the women paid with their lives. Achor says security agencies in Juba have one person in custody and confiscated a van allegedly used in the kidnappings.
What we have, the car is a Noha car. We need to establish facts about it. We have some good information which may help us to, because the number of the caller was registered and we have already contacted our Interpol branch so that they locate the owner, because it is a Ugandan number.
Apiok Char is being treated at Numli Hospital. Akau Pamena is a relative of Char.
The coldness that he slept in so caused some complication in breathing, and by then he fell unconscious at around 2 a.m. That was on 6 November. So the situation was not good. It was going from bad to worse.
Pamena says when Char was released from her captors, her mouth, eyes and hands were all sealed shut with glue. While police characterize these kidnappings and murders as a rare case, they are urging the general public to remain vigilant and report any unusual activity. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
The National Bureau of Statistics says food security in South Sudan has improved slightly during this harvest season, which began in September. But humanitarian officials warn if war continues, famine will return to South Sudan in 2018 and spread to several parts of the country. For VOA News, Nabil Biajo has more from Juba.
Some Juba residents say it's getting harder each day for them to put food on the table. Malene Isaac, who resides in Juba's Nyokoran area, says getting food is a daily struggle for him and many others.
When you look back those days, 3 to 5 years back, we really have a lot that we can eat. You know, you can eat as many times as you can in the daytime, you know. Probably 3 times a day you can eat. But now you find someone even has no meal that you can really eat in a day. You find someone eats only once in a day, and that is all.
Speaking in Arabic, resident Vivian Najat says she cannot afford most foodstuffs available in the market.
When you go to the market to buy something, you find that foodstuff which used to be cheap and affordable is now very expensive. We are suffering because of these high prices. Things are really bad these days.
The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification Report released today says the number of severely food insecure people is expected to reduce from 6 million people to about 4.8 before the end of the year. But the report also says the situation will quickly worsen during the early lean season if the fighting does not end. The lean season begins in March. The report covers the period from September to March 2018, when the dry season is expected to set in a month or two earlier than usual. Isaiah Chol Arway, head of South Sudan's National Bureau of Statistics, says the number of severely food insecure people is expected to climb back up to 5.1 million people early next year.
Worsening situation is attributed mainly to the protracted conflict that affected farming activities and the ongoing economic crisis in the country.
Arway says when the report was compiled in September this year, there were famine conditions in all three regions of South Sudan, especially in Nyerol and Ayot of former Jungle State, Kapoita East in former Eastern Equatoria State, as well as Wau in former Western Bahar Ghazal State. Arway says the conditions are likely to persist for some time in many of those areas.
The populations will remain in humanitarian catastrophe in Wau and Ayot. In January-March 2017, humanitarian catastrophe is expected to persist only in former Wau County. Of great concern is Greater Bagari, a sub-area of former Wau County, with an estimated population of 25,000, where 10% of the population is in humanitarian catastrophe.
Arway says unless the conflict ends and humanitarian organizations are able to access populations in need, There is no doubt that famine will spread across South Sudan.
Given the severity of food security and nutrition situation observed during the 2017 lean season, continued conflict, humanitarian access constraints, climatic shocks, and macroeconomic instability leading up to the 2018 lean season will likely result in famine conditions in multiple locations across South Sudan.
Sergei Tissot, head of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, says if refugee populations outside the country are excluded, the number of food insecure South Sudanese in 2018 will be unprecedented.
We will start 2018 with 5.1 million people food insecure. It means 1.2 million more than last year. It's even more than the peak during the lean season in 2016. That means that the situation is really difficult.
Tissot says humanitarian aid is crucial in combating hunger in South Sudan.
Assistance must start earlier. We must start prepositioning all the food and all the assistance much earlier than before. It's, of course, a call for funds to continue the assistance, but it's also a call for peace. There is no hope to see improvement in South Sudan without peace.
Mohimbo Mdoi, head of the UN Children's Agency UNICEF in South Sudan, says malnutrition among children is getting worse.
UNICEF estimates that 1.1 million children under the age of 5 in South Sudan are malnourished. That includes 300,000 children who are severely malnourished, which puts them at a much higher risk of death.
This year's harvest is extremely small because many farmers, especially in the green belt around South Sudan's equatorial region, had to abandon their fields and take shelter in refugee camps outside the country due to ongoing fighting. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biaju in Juba.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Nyam Nyam by Emmanuel Jal.
Like I left with a style. She's so fine with a silver mind. I like the way she whine and grind. I wish I could make her mine. Spend some time and make her shine. Under the sun I'll be a rain. Give her the life she deserves every day. If she's a shade I'll go and pray. Whatever she say I'll obey. To make her feel okay. Show them love and give them respect. But sometimes we get caught in our selfish routine, chasing our dreams and forgetting our queens. On this song, I apologize on behalf of all men. I try my best to be a gentleman. I try my best to set up a good
time. We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal with the song Nyam Nyam. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We want to hear your comments about our show. Drop us a line at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also find us on our Facebook page, that's South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
A shout out to mothers out there waiting for their sons to return from warfare, to grandmothers and daughters whose life is unfair. Governments cheat them and don't really care. Nobody knows and nobody feels the kind of pain.